Oh, it started. Okay. There's not a countdown on this one.
No, it did start. oh, no, we didn't do our theme music.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wait, I even brought it up. Hold on.
I was going to start singing. That was my singing, which was just me screaming.
Wait for it.
Ready?
Maybe.
Ready?
It's a real shame that people can't see us dancing as we have our theme music.
I mean, they probably can if we make that happen. But also, I do love how our outfits. I look like I'm going to a funeral. And you look like you're like at the beach.
I am at the beach.
That's right. However, I am not going to a funeral, so I have no excuse.
I'm also not actually at the beach. I'm 7 minutes away from it.
Oh, let's have a big boohoo.
Boohoo. It is funny though, because it's like the, like if you were to take us a quick snapshot of our personality in terms of dress,
right,
it's
now,
right now,
right it's now,
this very moment.
I almost texted you. I'm texting Stuart. I'm supposed to have a gin tonic. I'm supposed to have a gin
tonic.
It's his birthday tomorrow, and I just
here's
my sent him out of, I sent him out of the room. And said he was going to order a takeaway. Because by the way, guys, for those of you listening, this is my third podcast now of the night. I've been with the systematic geekologist for earlier. Part of this is Stuart's problem, though, because he decided to
be born. Yeah,
and I had to, you know, do other things whilst, you know, having money and a career and all that. So anyway,
it's very rude of him. Yeah. How dare.
We also had fancy gin.
Mm.
It's not mine.
I was going to say, why do you have fancy gin?
We don't have tonic.
Do you have club soda? And or... lemonade?
No.
Yeah. Okay.
Those aren't flavors we operate in. I don't know how else to put it other than that. We're not really those kind of people. Well, he's going to make it work. We have Sprite, which feels okay.
It feels close enough. Yeah. Because you often put lemon or lime in a gin and tonic. So. Yeah.
Feels all right.
Yeah.
So I've been with the geeks, as we call them, and now I'm with Christy, and we were talking about Love is Blind, where I was saying that I have not completed Love is Blind, because, well, there's several reasons, but one of the main we lost power, and then did I tell you our internet just blew out?
Yes. And yeah. You wanted Stuart to climb on the pole.
I wanted him to climb on the pole. I said,
you were like, Stuart, get up on that pole
and fix it.
I think I left you that gin.
Okay,
probably, because I just didn't buy it.
Yeah, I left that gin for you.
The story takes an interesting turn. But I do want you to know that I did start out by saying I sure didn't buy it some version of that. So, like, did you leave this when you visited me?
I did. I left it when I visited you last summer. I said, I give you a decent gin so that you can have a good gin.
It did me like 2 inches.
Well, that is accurate. It was mostly already gone. So
I can't read.
I know.
I was celebrating your birthday though.
Good.
She was like, I am so thankful and grateful for Stuart's birth.
Butter.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
We just say one word and we know it. This is guys, don't watch Bridgerton. Just know that you say one word, which by the way is in reference to a curry.
I was going to say, is
it butter? And by butter, I mean butter chicken.
Yeah, that's exactly what I assumed. I was like, oh, they're getting Indian food. And she's ordering butter chicken.
That's exactly what I was sharing.
Yeah.
This is right. Speaking of Love is Blind, this is right. Stuart did bring me a G&T. And yeah, I haven't watched it because I like the show, actually. I like the setup of the show. And some of the seasons were very funny. And of course, it's fun to see it when it's in your area. I will say, I think the Charlotte season, it really started to go down, and the Colorado season was a trash fire. And this season's
even worse.
Like at the fire built on the fire.
Yeah.
And if so the fire
lit some nearby dog poo, that's yeah. the entire season.
And I'm beginning to think like here is my problem. I don't think Love is Blind. I think that is an insane premise.
Yeah.
That's not going to hit some of our more romantic listeners, but let's get real here.
Let's be very honest, though. I agree with you. I think that, like, physical attraction is actually important. So, like, there's that. But also, I need to be extremely clear when I say that the things they talk about in the pods this season, everyone could have potentially ended up with everyone else. They literally just sat there being like, do you like puppies? I like puppies. Do you like being happy or angry? Oh, I also like being happy. Like,
I should have gone in just Wednesday Addams. Like, I'm kind of dressed right now and just been like, yeah. I actually don't like happy.
I don't like happiness and I want to kill puppies.
And I want cats and then, not puppies.
Yeah. Like, I mean, it was like a lot of, oh my God, he just gets me so much. But like, you've said nothing of substance, really. And like, anytime anybody would bring up something of substance, they would immediately stop talking to that person. So like by and large, none of these people have genuine conversations. And then they get on the other side and they're like, oh my God, I don't like you at all. Like, no shit.
No shit. I mean, I think that's the thing is like, I like to believe or like Married at First Sight. And it's like, we have a 2% success rate. And I'm like, I think that you guys think we as humans are better than what we are.
Yeah.
Maybe that is the problem.
Maybe.
Is that like,
we're overly optimistic about what humanity is doing here.
Like, I met Stuart internet dating, but like, we had pictures.
Yeah.
We did. Now, and honestly, we didn't even really start dating till we saw each other in human form. And like, I don't think that that's a crazy thing.
No.
Like, I don't know that we're not like human. Well, I mean, biology feels like this is part of it.
It does also feel like increasing, like, so I remember the first season, which was what, in Atlanta, I think? I think it was either in Atlanta or in Georgia generally, but they all lived.
I maybe didn't see them.
The first season's great. But they all lived in the same area, right? Mm-hmm. And so when they got out of the pods and they moved into the apartments, like, they were still going to work, but they also knew, like, we live here. This is where our lives already are, which is much more, like, compatible with this, like, sped up version of marriage. By the time we got to Denver, like, one of the dudes in there, he lived 3-4 hours outside of Denver. And it was
one of the girls was in California or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, one of the girls actually lived in California and was just pretending that she was going to move to Denver. It was a lot of like,
I don't think that that was like a,
Ohio is the whole state, Leah. It's the whole state. They don't even live near a specific city. So like, some of them are in Cleveland, some of them are in Columbus. Like, it's the whole of the state. And so they're all like, who's going to move to where? Like, the UK did the same thing, though arguably that was a much better season. Like, I liked the UK one. They seemed to have a general sense of
where were they based in the UK?
It was just the whole of the UK as well.
Oh, okay.
So like one guy was in Belfast. There was somebody in London. Like it was all over the place.
Oh, wow.
Because again, they just treated it like this is the whole UK. And then they did. And one of the couples broke up because they couldn't decide, like, we're going to live in the same place. And they didn't. And it, you know, obviously felt, but this Ohio is the same way. It's like, you're not in the same places. Like you're living in different places. And then it's like, you get married without having decided where you're going to live.
Oh. Like, and that feels like an important, like,
that feels like
the Charlotte season.
I know I'm not married, so I'm not like one to speak, but you should at least know where you're going to live.
I married a Scottish man and I'm from Georgia. Yeah. You need to have that combo.
Yeah.
The Charlotte season, there were some in the suburbs, but like they were for the most part, they were in the region.
They were, yeah. It's like
in a commutable region.
It's like
to the metro area.
Like we live near each other. You know? And not like.
Yeah. So well, you're setting yourself up for.
I'm going to have to take a plane to see you.
Right. It's almost like they didn't really want to fall in love, Chris.
Yeah. I know. Weird that. Yeah. So
it's starting to go into bachelor territory, I feel like.
It is. Well, and too, I've heard for a few seasons now that they're not applying. People aren't applying anymore. They're being recruited based on their influencer status, which again, like that's defeating the whole of the point for it. So RIP to Love is Blind being like actual.
RIP to LIB. Guys, welcome to Theology on the Rocks, where we are watching stuff to distract us from the hellscape that is our reality.
Yep.
In this case, it is Love is Blind. I also talked about Bridgerton on Systematic Ecology, which is predominantly men, and I was really happy with that.
I am so glad that you made them listen to you talk about Bridgerton.
I did.
How many of them were like, yes, I secretly love the show or openly love the show?
To be fair, it was two guys on there. And one of them, Kevin and Christian, and Kevin was like, yeah, no, I watch it. And Christian was like, I'll never watch it. And I was like, you know what?
That tracks.
And also, I don't care. It's funny because like on being on that show, on Systematic Ecology, is it's funny because you can't really like, I will say what they do very well at is yucking on people's yums in a way.
Like, yeah. Kind of like,
but I do like to throw some like, because I very well could have talked about Scream or like any number because I saw that on opening night.
Mm-hmm.
That trash fire of a trash fire. Speaking of Love is Blind, I'd rather, anyway. wrong show, but I could have talked about that, and I was like, no, we're doing Bridgerton.
We're gonna talk about Bridgerton. I like it. I mean, yeah, it
wasn't great either. I mean, honestly, I'm in this. You remember when we had our summer of rejection?
Yeah,
I feel like I'm in my spring of disappointment. Like I don't even think Christy knows me better than most. Like it isn't even the mental health thing. I think I just haven't, there's not been a lot of like stuff that's just grabbed me. Like actually talked about Mindhunter on the Geeks, this last one. And I just remembered how good that show was. You watched that, right? Mindhunter?
Yeah, it was really good.
Oh, good. Like
so good.
How many shows have we seen recently that just like made us be like, yippee, yippee.
You know what shows, I will say there are two shows that I really love that are currently happening.
Mm-hmm.
One is The Pit.
Ooh, good call. I haven't seen it.
The Pit is really good.
Okay.
It's Noah Wiley from ER. So like he's back in the ER.
So I saw a thing that was like, oh, we're bombing the Middle East. Noah Wiley's back in the hospital. It's like we're 2000 something again.
Yeah.
You may have heard that, actually.
And then Shrinking. With Shrinking. So Shrinking, Jason Segel is the lead and like I think produced
love
it.
Yep.
But Harrison Ford is in it, as well as Brett Goldstein, aka Roy Kent from Ted Lasso. That's so, mm-hmm. And oh, and the Jordan from Scrubs. I don't know her real name, nor do I know the name in this show, but she was Jordan on Scrubs. She's in it.
Sometimes you can just be known for your, like,
yeah, I mean, iconic. Your role. Yeah, yeah, so sorry. So yeah, it's fantastic and I love it. So those are my two recommendations for you for TV shows.
I want to watch The Bear, but I also get stressed out easily.
You know, I watched the first season and I was like, that was enough. It was good, but it was too much yelling.
Having worked in restaurants and bars, I'm like, am I just gonna get stressed out by this? Like,
I mean, potentially, I got stressed out because it was just very loud.
Oh.
I was like, there is a lot of yelling.
Christy and I met up. This is triggering. We met up in Greenville last weekend for AR Southeast, which will lead into this convo. But I do want to point out that Christy had taken Ativan, which is does not sponsor our podcast anyway, but seems to pop up at random.
And please do take responsibly.
However, we went into this hotel bar, which, by the way, was a hotel bar, and you know the vibe of a hotel bar. And she goes, "It's so loud in here."
You know what I've discovered is that
they were playing jazz music.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't loud, but what I've discovered is that when I've taken the Ativan, and I'm kind of, there are multiple levels of Ativan that I have experienced in my tenure. And when I'm on this particular level, all the noises are equally the same volume and I can't filter any of it, you know? And so you talking and the people like two tables over talking were the same volume and I couldn't like hone in on you. So I was just having the worst time because there were a lot of people talking. At normal volume.
It was a Marriott, so one was on the chandeliers, but there were people that were there.
Yeah. I just could not like
it just focus. Made me laugh so hard.
And I was just
it was like you were experiencing two different like planes of existence.
Yes.
Because I like the night that you and I went to that Irish bar, that was loud.
That was loud, but I was fine. I was like, this is great.
So yeah. Like when you compare it to that night, I was like,
This has happened to me a couple of times. And I've started to recognize that like, I just can't filter sound well when I'm, you know? And so like, everything is just the same volume.
Right.
And I'm trying so hard to be like, hear Leah, but I can't, you know.
You're gonna remember. I was like telling her all because I had been at this conference like the whole day and had like things happen, and I wanted to tell her about them. And I was like, Are you gonna remember any of this?
Yeah,
but what's cool is I got to tell her the same story twice.
Yeah,
and you may think that's sarcastic, but actually, if you're anxious, you'll know that. Telling the same story twice is like maybe the most healing thing that you can do.
Yeah, it really is. Cause you really need to like get it out. Like,
yeah. Purge like, it and I got her reactions, her drug reactions to the first go. And then I could get her reactions again.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd be like, did you remember this? And she was like, no. And I was like, great. So here we go again.
Yep. Yep.
My intrusive thoughts say that you need to hear this again.
And I was like, yeah, absolutely. I will hear it again. Also, because I went back to our hotel room before you, and I had to sleep, you know, I was sleeping on the pullout couch, which is fine. But I looked around and I realized that there was no bedding. Like our hotel room had no closet. So there was no bedding. So I had to call the front desk and the security guard came up with my bedding because I guess everybody else had gone home is what she told me. And so he hands me the bag of bedding. He goes, here's your bedding. And then he goes, and one pillow. And he hands me a single pillow. And I was like,
again, really want to reiterate that this is a not expensive hotel.
And I was like, what is happening right now? And I like make the bed, which was not a simple task in my state. And then I took my one pillow and I was like, this is not gonna work. So I stole one of Leah's pillows, which was fine. But like, I just kept looking at like, he said it so intently, and your one pillow. And I was like,
it was security, so he would know.
So, thank you, sir. I don't know what to do now. Yeah. It was otherwise a nice hotel though.
No, and it was. I mean, it was, I would say conference hotels are kind of similar. Like they're all just like they're overly priced and they shouldn't be that expensive, but they are kind of similar. Like Christy and I really financially were missing a trick before we knew each other, because now we can just get ourselves a king bed and a pullout couch.
Yep.
And we're good to go. But
we're
like
living the life, yeah.
We're living the life. But like, well, you probably had other people to room with. I didn't.
No, because I only knew men. It was me and a bunch of dudes. So
we're very Puritan over here on Theology on the Rocks. By the way, welcome to Theology on the Rocks, where we don't share hotel rooms with men.
We don't share hotel rooms with men. Actually, but I wouldn't with these men for sure. I would with some men, not these men. I love them dearly.
I probably would if they were on, like, if they were on the pullout couch.
No,
maybe. Not even.
That's a hard pass. Not even Kyle. No,
you knew exactly. Sorry, I just clapped in the microphone. You knew exactly who I was gonna. I was like, I'm not gonna like name him, and then you named him, and I was like, that's a friend of Christie's.
I love Kyle. I
would room with.
Yeah, you can't. He's the most wonderful person. He's like, so kind.
I was gonna say that,
so smart and just a lovely person, but no, absolutely not.
Oh, okay.
That's a bridge too far for our friendship.
Kyle, if you're out there listening,
Kyle, I love you, but no.
You and I,
you know what? I feel confident that he would agree with me.
Would Kevin, Kevin's my Kyle.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe not. I can sort of see it if I use Kevin as an example. Like I can, because it becomes like, it's not even a sexual thing at some stage.
No.
Like an intimacy that you don't have with a
friend. It's just like, I don't know. There's something just very vulnerable about sharing a room with somebody.
Yeah.
I think maybe it's like in my old age, like when in my 20s, I would just sleep wherever I landed, you know. Yeah. But
it
like
also,
now,
if you snore or not, if you snore, you're dead.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. Yeah. Like, I'm very like, also, and potentially this is some therapy I need to receive, but I'm the
worst.
We
need a t-shirt that says, and potentially this is some therapy we need to receive.
I'm such a bad sleeper. That like,
in what sense?
Well, I move a lot. I'm a violent sleeper. I'm gonna move around the bed a lot. I do snore to varying degrees. Yeah. I also talk in my sleep.
Oh, didn't hear that part.
Yeah, well, not all the time. You have to initiate. You're not gonna do that because you're also asleep. So that's, I'm not worried about that, but like,
it should be known. I wasn't just like watching Christy. So here's my sleep problem. I don't go to sleep early. Everyone knows this is not new news.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily need to be out in the world, but I get very like, is there just something within me that can't go to sleep? Even if I wake up early, it doesn't matter. Christy and I woke up at like bonkers o'clock one day and it was just like, well, bonkers for me anyway, but
I was gonna say,
well, we woke up that one day at like 8 or something, and I the next day I didn't go to bed till like 4 a.m. like I just can't, it's not that way, but yeah, I will say I'm but part of that's an anxiety sleeper, so like my thoughts,
yeah,
I usually can operate during the day okay, but like I sleep anxious. So it means that I can't sleep well. I'll wake up to anything.
So my sleep issues mean that I have spent such a massive part of my life telling people that I'm sorry for being a bad sleeper. And having most of my friends be like, put Christy in her own room. She's terrible. So it does feel
like you were that crazy. I mean, we weren't in the same bed, but like you weren't like.
I think not being in the same bed helps for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But also I think that you're.
I don't think it would have made me sleep any more or less, to be fair.
I think that you're a good enough sleeper. Like you, when you're asleep, you're asleep.
I am. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think that that helps. But like a lot of people have just been like, you're awful. And so
I'm not wanting to like burn down everything.
So if I'm not like comfortable enough, like you, I'm like, okay, whatever. But like, if it's somebody I'm not super close with,
yeah,
I'm not going to sleep. Cause I'm going to be the whole time. Like I'm going to torture them and they're going to hate me in the morning.
Mm.
You know,
you just need to take a big old pill if I don't give a fuck.
I mean, sometimes I just need to take that Ativan again.
I was going to say, I feel like that's like Ativan. That's what their advert should be.
Right. Ativan. Make Christy sleep. I did want, because when I first got prescribed, when they were trying to find a good pill for me for the flying thing, they started with Ambien.
Mm.
But my doctor was like, I need you to try this out in like a safe environment because people do weird things on Ambien.
Yeah. Tiger Woods.
And so, so I went and spent the night at my friend Jen's house and I gave her my car keys. I was like, here, hide these from me. Like, I don't know what's going to happen. Here. Nothing here. Happened. Turns out I just slept.
Yeah. I think Amy is just like I mean,
look,
as we have said before, we all have our methods of coping. I will say I am president now of AR Southeast, which is super exciting. And I invited Christy to come and hang out with me because she is technically in our AR Southeast region. Yeah,
I'm an official member.
You are?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I got her to come up and to, you know, do academic things, but also to hang out. But I will say it was very funny to switch between worlds of friend. And we do this at Big AR as well.
Yeah.
It's to switch between worlds of friendship and like having to be serious, which I think is an interesting thing.
We were on our first panel together.
We were on our first panel.
And we did it twice. We had one on Saturday and one on Sunday.
And we killed it.
We
which
did.
I'm not surprised by, although what I realized doing the panels is I don't think that you and I have seen each other perform very much in those worlds.
Like, no,
I think we've seen each other do various things, but I think that was a new thing of having to actually, cause I've seen her give a paper. She's seen me give a paper like at Big AR. And then like, but I don't think we've ever had to like kind of vibe and worked. It was a far more hinged version of this podcast.
Oh yes. It was like very organized and focused. And
we didn't talk about Ambien or Ativan once.
Not once. No, everything was on topic. We used big words.
We made it work. So it's always fun to do that when you ever you have friends who are in your world and you get to see each other doing things in their worlds.
Yeah.
And Christy did a great job. So I started a new unit at AR Southeast on religion in the American South, which is something I've been wanting to do. I originally went to Scotland to write about the South, actually. And my supervisor said that I was too close to the topic.
Mm-hmm.
And that she advised me not to write about the subject, but not in the geographical area, which is why I did Northern Ireland. And she was quite right. Actually, she was very right about that. But now I'm getting to write about it. And so I got to start that unit and Christy gave a paper and another new friend of ours, Ben, gave a paper.
Fantastic which, paper.
It's such a great paper. It was on snake handling. It's such a great paper on snake handling.
On snake handling. It was great.
It really was. Like, it was such an interesting, because he went away that I didn't think he was going to go, which was like this idea of how we treat animals and services and the differences and like how we view animals.
Mm-hmm.
And
it was so fascinating to hear. He was so respectful of the people, because that's also something that doesn't like always happen and should. We should be more respectful of people we're talking about, but like he was very respectful of people while also making some very serious like comments about the practice and things like that. And one of the things he focused on was the animal treatment, which is really fascinating. Yeah.
It was a masterclass in this idea of how to do, which a lot of us do, qualitative research with theologies we don't agree with. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes we can just say like, of course it's bad, like whatever, but also how do we talk about, I'm currently reading a book that does this very well. Dang it. I can't remember the name of it, but I'll put it up. I'll take a picture of it, but she's essentially a researcher who's doing stuff on conversion therapy. So she goes to live at one of these places you can tell she's trying, and she says it. She's like, I'm trying to understand the theology, which is why I get really pissed off about, I mean, Christy and I have the same gripe about people who are like, you do theology, like you can't do this sort of objective research. And I think it's really annoying because you can see her writing. She's telling us what their theology is. She's doing a theological project, but she's telling you what they think. And I think that's really interesting. And I think that's what Ben did really well.
Yeah.
Is that he was telling you what they think and what they do, but not necessarily that he, like.
It was very clear that he didn't agree with it.
100%. And
but at the same time, he wasn't disparaging them.
Right. He was disrespectful.
Yeah, he was respectful, but he was also like able, like you said, it was very well done.
It was super well done. I'm going to find this book because it's making me mad.
It was very interesting to hear the way that he could explain their beliefs about it. And then also kind of here are reasons why he didn't agree, and also other concerns, again, in part the animal aspect, but also like some of the just general, like what he said about a wet bite versus a dry bite. I knew this, okay? Like I knew this.
And I grew up in these lands and I didn't know that.
Well, because rattlesnakes are a big problem in Colorado, one of the issues with rattlesnakes is that babies don't control their venom. And so if you get bit by a baby, it's much worse than an adult, because most of the time an adult is going to, what he called a dry bite, where they don't release the venom. So what he was saying was you get bit a lot. It's just that most of them are dry. And then, you know, one time out of 100, it's they release the venom and then you die.
It was interesting because I thought a lot more.
And I was like,
he told me how many people had died, which was not a lot. I was kind of surprised because in my head I thought, you know, I thought it was more.
Yeah,
I thought it would have been more.
But it was so fascinating to hear like scientific reasons why people haven't died that don't really enforce their beliefs, but do kind of help to understand what's going on. So yeah, it was just very interesting.
And also the theological, I said this during the response, is the theological gymnastics of having, and this is where the theology part is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're doing something you consider to be quote unquote objective research, which I would argue doesn't exist, but is that the theology is really important to understanding that group of people.
Yeah.
Because it is what makes them pick up these snakes and handle them. And the sort of, I said gymnastics that it takes to justify. So if they get bit and they die, it was their time, quote unquote.
Yeah, they didn't have enough faith.
Right.
Which is,
or they don't die and they had faith. Like, it's just this sort of like maneuvering. And again, you can think that's totally insane, but it doesn't make what they're doing any less a thing that's happening.
Right.
You know?
And it doesn't make them, you know, I talk about this with my students sometimes, is that we can have concerns about theologies or religions, but we need to know how to center our frustrations about it, because a lot of people who are doing these things genuinely believe and are like authentically practicing things out of goodness, right? Out of a desire to be faithful or a desire to serve God or whatever, not out of malice. There's not always this like 100 people in this group, all of them know that this is fake and are maliciously practicing bad religion or something. Like, that's not right. What's happening. So to be more thoughtful about how we talk about average followers in groups, I think is really important.
Yeah. So, yeah. Honoring those people and also acknowledging that stuff is not necessarily correct. And I will say it's a balancing act. And actually in some ways I think it makes it more difficult than other forms of research, because you're having to do that is to, mm-hmm. these are people's long held beliefs and you're mm-hmm. wanting people to understand what they are and not justify what they are. And I think that's a different situation. So this book's called Straight to Jesus, which is such a great title, by Tanya Erzen, E-R-Z-E-N. My accent doesn't love that word. Erzen. Christy will be happy to know she is a professor at Ohio State.
Oh, good.
No one's perfect.
But... At the Ohio State. Thank you.
Oh, it just says Ohio State here. It doesn't
have... Incorrect.
She's not in the cult, so that's different. She just hung out in a different one. But yeah, so she writes this book and they wanted to approve it for her, but she lives at one of these big conversion therapy places. So for her, she's an assistant professor of comparative studies. So she doesn't do like theology, religious studies. So she's simply trying to like see what's happening. And it's really interesting because I think she does it very well. I'd advocate this book because I do think she does it well. Like our friend Ben, who did the snake handling thing. It's, like I said, it's a tough, you can tell she doesn't agree with it.
Yeah.
It isn't really a question of whether she does, mm-hmm. but it's just that she's also wanting other people to. Yeah.
Because I don't think it's necessarily helping us to understand why a theology is bad or why a practice is bad or something. Isn't hinged on making all of the people participating villains.
Right. Like,
you can be aware that some of those people, most of those people even, are trying to operate in a moral sense that they understand and still be very critical of or clear about your disagreement with it. You know, like, it's not one or the other. I think we often act like it is.
You know? Yeah. And I mean, I think, and this isn't being morally ambiguous. Christy and I have said, I think it's quite clear on this podcast where our positions are on things. I wrote a book called Bad Theology and Christy is very clear about how she feels about injustice. But I do think it's one of those things of like the idea that you are somehow, again, objective and research to me feels like a crazy thing, even if you're doing math. Like, I just don't get, because there's a big debate now with theology and religious studies that religious studies does like
objective
stuff. And it's
incorrect.
It's not correct. I just think you're, especially when you're doing religion. So my thing is, that's what we're talking about today, guys, by the way. Our AR Southeast, which we've already started talking about, sort of endeavors, is that if you're going to talk about religion, especially in the Southeast, which is what that's about, you have to talk about theology.
Yeah. You know,
the current president of AR Southeast did her presidential talk actually on Native peoples in the South. And so she fancies herself to be kind of an ethnographer who does all the stuff, which is quite right.
Mm-hmm.
But the interesting thing about the particular tribe that she looks at is that they're Pentecostal.
Yeah.
That they, and that is a huge part of their identity. Which is this idea that actually to be a part of the tribe is to not do all the things that one might think about in terms of the tribe, but is to be a part of this one Pentecostal church in this actual like community.
Mm-hmm.
And their chief is the pastor of this church, this Pentecostal church.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
they do these like traditional things like on a yearly basis. They do. She actually described that it was interesting because they like build teepees, which they wouldn't actually, their tribe would not have typically had, but they do all this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And they have like dances and traditional dances, and that she is trying to work towards them to, because the big thing in the U.S. is that you have to be a recognized tribe, but to do that, right, you have to go through all of this paperwork. But one of the things is that, and so my question at the end of her paper was a theological question, because she talked about there's a lot of syncretic practices, like they'll baptize, but then they'll call it baptism, but then it's also, they'll say it's like some kind of native practice at the same time, but it is baptism and all this sort of thing. But I said, you know, is there an issue with you trying to help them fill out this paperwork to be a recognized tribe so they can get federal funding with the fact that they have this kind of, and Christina talked about this last a couple weeks, so this two kingdom theology, which is this idea of like, well, it doesn't matter if we get this on earth, because I mean, especially with Pentecostalism, you get this very high level of the afterlife.
Yeah.
And she got quite emotional and was like, actually, yeah, no, it is. That is an issue, because while they see this as incredibly important, of course, to be, you know, whatever, they also see that it's not the ultimate end in their world.
Yeah.
And so they focus a lot of times on that ultimate end. And it was an interesting paper, but it also just highlighted that even if you want to do this quote unquote ethnographical, you know, I'm being an anthropologist and going out and studying this tribe and, you know, fill in the blank southern region, is that this tribe, she had said, had been Pentecostal since like the Second Great Awakening. So this is like, they were a part of this original conversion.
Yeah.
So to them, being a part of the tribe was being that.
Part of that, yeah. I think too, you know, I was talking about it with my students today, actually, the whole notion of religious studies is centered around opinions about what counts as a religion and what doesn't, and what discussions count as religious and what doesn't. And that also doesn't always translate well, you know, like there's a lot about religion that is like, essentially tied to our understanding of society and culture and practice. So like this tribe, seeing the Pentecostalism as being part of their culture now, you know, is something you can't pull apart and say like, well, but historically you wouldn't have been, or something like that. You know, like that's not how that operates. And or like talking about, you know, Shinto in Japan is not a clear-cut religious discussion. And we tend to get very like, this is a religion, like Christianity is a religion, and we're going to analyze it from the outside. But like, we're not doing that objectively, because we have opinions about what counts and what doesn't count and how to do it. And so, yeah, I mean, to pretend that we're objective about these conversations is just not accurate, but it's also like, is that helpful? You know, like,
I think it's an archaic view of like, I do think it comes, you know, what's weird is I don't blame religious studies. I blame anthropology for this. If you want me to blame.
Okay. Oh, I'm excited. Yeah. Blame somebody. Whose problem? Yeah.
Let's blame people.
Let's blame.
But it was this, okay, like this idea of, we're going to study, you know, these, I'm saying like, probably like I would say 1800s, you know, we're starting to, yeah. I would say, especially British, no offense.
Yes. No, absolutely.
Yeah. Like sort of anthropologists who are going out and being like, we're going to study this foreign land.
Yeah.
And we're going to, you know, document it and we're going to like not touch it. Let's be real.
Right.
We're right.
Yeah.
And we're going to preserve that information. That's going to be pure, quote unquote, pure information that we will take and we will not affect it. And we will observe it. And I will bring it back home and show everyone about, you know, these Papua New Guinea folk who, you know, believe something that's different from us and nothing will get affected. It's a wild and crazy trip. It's an ego trip. I mean, you and I work in theology. I thought we'd seen all the ego trips, but it is a ego trip that is shockingly unreflective.
It's like, so unreflective. I mean, and this is one of the things, at least I can say, at least theologians are like, I believe this specific thing. This is where I'm planting my flag. As opposed to being like, you believe this thing. I have studied you and you believe this. Like, that's some hubris right there, you know?
Yeah, and that's a part of the, I mean, even theologians, I've met theologians who are not religious. They just
like the
study of that sociologically. But even, I'll say, being a practical theologian, part of the thing that was really driven into me is you show people what you are going to write about them.
Yeah.
So like, I'm interviewing people who, I've done this before when I did stuff with ordination, like, I show them the interviews. They don't necessarily get the final like analysis. Right. If I can do that, they
see it. Yeah.
They'll see what words I'm using of their words.
Yeah.
And they have every right to take those words out. They can change anything.
Yeah.
Like, the only reason I don't show them the final product is I usually get like a week.
We're not on top of things enough.
Right. But also it's just the publishers are sometimes just like, here's your thing. Is it okay? Yeah. Okay, you got a week. And not all publishers create equal, but that's oftentimes the thing. But I can at least let them see what they're being, what I'm going to use in terms of the source material. And like a lot of these early anthropologists wouldn't give, not even close to giving people that.
Absolutely not. Yeah. Well, I mean, too, like even if you're not a religious theologian, like if you're an atheist doing Christian theology, which is actually incredibly common, right?
Yeah.
You're still making an I statement. There's still an I statement in there of like, I believe this is the correct interpretation of this doctrine. I'm like backing that up on my own work or whatever. And I just have always felt like that's still happening in religious studies. It's just doing it without being honest sometimes. We sound like we hate religious studies. We both do it also, but like,
well, Christianity is a religion, so we do religious studies. I mean, and it's not,
well, yeah, and like,
it's an internal,
we like, live in this world debate. So much that we have feelings, but like, yeah, it when we're doing religious studies, the objectivity is supposed to be like, this is what this religion does, without being like, I think this is what this religion does, or I think this is how this religion operates.
Right. And in this particular presentation, it was interesting because this person said, oh, well, you know, I'm working on this stuff for them and I, you know, I think it's important. And it's like, but maybe, and they probably do. I'm not putting words in their mouth. I don't know the study, but like, maybe they think other things are more important, you know? And I think that's the thing, is that we put on these groups of people that we study ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And inevitably when we write about anything, again, I would say no matter what your subject is, we will put ourselves on that. And it's part of the reason that kind of inspired me to do a lot of stuff with religion in the South, is I felt like at least I could be a little bit of an insider, not to every context, of course, but I learned theology as a outsider, I felt like.
Yeah.
At least geographically, but also, and not religiously, but, you know, culturally, geographically, and Christy knows, she also did. So you kind of know a little bit of what that's like.
Yeah.
And so it was kind of nice to be able to revisit that. And so
I think it was one of the things that one of my favorite things that happened in the session was actually before, when somebody came in and sat down and said, I've lived here my whole life, so I'm excited to hear what I believe, you know, like,
yeah,
as a kind of tongue and, you know, kind of tongue in cheek, like comment on this is a session about us, you know, and I am not from the South and never have.
You did a good job of stating that though, which I think was actually very smart.
I mean,
gotten attacked or anything, but like, I think it was, sometimes you just have to tell people like, look, I know that I don't know about this.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I was saying culturally. Like one of the things I really wanted to stress, well, two things that I really wanted to stress. One is that this is not my lived experience. Like I have not, because I don't live in the South now. Like I might be south of you, but I live in Central Florida. And guess what? That is not. Like, it's not the South. Tom Herman's Webster is not the South.
By the way, we should say he is from the South.
He is from the South.
I'm a long generation.
He and Leah have different opinions about the South, but neither of them would say that I
would. Actually, we both agree on that.
Central Florida.
Yeah, I think we both. I think we.
No one thinks this is the South, but
we can come together on that one.
So I wanted to make sure, and also, like, I mean, it's abundantly clear that I'm not from the South because I don't sound at all like I'm from the South. So that's like, I'm not going to hide that. But I also wanted to be clear that the commentary I was making was coming from my own perspective, because it's a comment of like, because I did Southern Gothic literature and a discussion about how Southern Gothic literature is kind of mimicking prophets from like the Hebrew Bible.
Good. Such a good talk.
Thanks, I appreciate it. Yeah. But it was supposed to say, this isn't even really meant to be the South realistically. It's supposed to be a comment on how the South is perceived,
mm-hmm.
and the ideas that people have outside of the South of what's going on in the South. And one of the, I don't know if you heard this, but one of the people in the audience came up to me after and said, she was like, I just wanted to say thank you for affirming the fact that we've always thought these certain things about ourselves, but we never knew what other people thought about us.
I heard her say that.
Yeah. And so she was like, I just really appreciated hearing your perspective on it. And like, for like kind of affirming what we've always thought. And I was like, oh yeah, no, you're all very aware.
I made a follow up comment that no one hates the South as much as we hate ourselves.
Yeah. Like, I mean,
Which is true.
You and I joke about this often, but like, yeah, there's a self-deprecating identification that comes with the South that, for better or for worse, is just part of it. And I think when somebody like me is coming in and saying like, hey, here are things that I'm observing about the South, like.
But it ties back into the combo we just had.
Yeah. Like, I don't want to sound like I'm saying this is how you guys are. I'm very much saying this is how we perceive you.
Correct.
And whether or not that's accurate, or even what you're meaning to happen, or if it is accurate and now you feel seen, all of that can be different. Like, people in the audience are probably having different reactions, but like,
it was just from doing literature. Is there any way to analyze something that's 100? Like, mm-mm. I don't think, no, we can't. Like, you talk about books and like
there's not, no. I mean, everything is
culture. Like, you say this is not how you actually are, but like, can anyone see how anyone, like, whether it's media or humans, like, can any of us see what we actually, quote unquote, actually are? I don't know.
No, I don't think so. I mean, not 100%, you know, like.
Right. We can speculate.
We can speculate. Like,
do book group plug. But like, we can't 100% know what like Toni Morrison was trying to say.
Right. Like, I mean, we can listen to her say like, here are the things I was trying to say, but even in that, that's
fine. Our own
and she's also filtering it for the interview. And mm-hmm. like, there's a lot of intentionality going on that I think it's to make a weird connection. It's like going to sleep, you know, like it's the same. you're trying to say, like, here's what I'm trying to tell you what I'm like when I'm asleep. I don't actually know what I'm like when I'm asleep. I'm asleep. Like, I can only tell you things that I've heard about myself.
Right.
I can't actually tell you what I'm like. So, like, if I say, you know, Leah, these are things I do in my sleep, and you're like, we have shared several hotel rooms. I've never observed this happen.
I haven't heard you talk yet.
So. You haven't heard me talk, you know.
Good thing, I don't know.
I'm going to be honest with you. You might not know that it was happening. I'm very coherent. It's just that I lie. Everything I tell you is going to be just a big lie. It's a real problem. But like, yeah, it's like we're having this conversation about something that can't be nailed down perfectly, you know? Right.
No, and I think that's a thing. And I feel like we love to tie things up. We're just, I'm not saying we're tying it up right now, but I'm just saying like, we love to make connections. And I think that is the connection with the anthropology thing is like, I don't think like you can ever really know your subject in whatever world that, whether that's again, media or human, I don't think you can ever really know them. So you're just doing your best to interpret. So this idea that Southerners do have a bit of a, well, it's a huge chip on their shoulder, but it's, you know, I joke to Christy all the time that she's a Yankee and that's a funny thing. But the idea is that we do it in a very self-deprecating way. Like we've always viewed people up there as being better. So our response, because we are a digi society, is to say, oh, well, we'll mock them because they're better, you know? And so, you know, Rich Hall, who has this great documentary called The Dirty South on, I mention it often on YouTube. He says, the South was never going to forget about the Civil War, and Hollywood was never going to let them forget either.
Mm.
And it feels as though there's some sort of continuation of that just throughout life.
It's well,
we've never been able to get over that part.
One of the books that I used was, it's by Leanne Duck, and it's on,
I need to snag that book.
I know.
I heard you referencing it and I was like, I need that.
It's in my car at the moment, so I can't even look at it. But, I was like, what happened to it? It's in my car. It's called, oh gosh, no, I'm going to put a picture up of it later. Because it's a long, so like, you know, it's a proper academic book. So there's a colon and I'm mixing up the words. So I can't get there, but it's on Southern exceptionalism and U.S. nationalism. I think it's called The Nation's Region.
Oh my God, Christy, by far, that was I'm not saying it was the best part, but as someone who enjoys this, anyway, sorry.
You would love this. Like, so she analyzed.
So interesting.
She analyzed three authors. I believe it's three. Three authors. Erskine Caldwell, who wrote Tobacco Road,
mm-hmm.
as well as other stuff. But that's the like, primary text. William Faulkner and Zora Neale Hurston. And she talks about the different portrayals of the South. But one of the things she says leading up to it is that the U.S. needs the South to be their scapegoat, because otherwise we have to deal with the fact that the sins of the South are the sins of the whole country. Huh. And so like, it's a fantastic book. But it's a real big statement about the way that the North treats the South, and the way that the South takes on a lot of the blame and responsibility. And we talk about this a lot with current politics and gerrymandering and the various reasons why the South tends to be more red, mm-hmm. and all of those kinds of things, because it's much more complicated than just that all of the world's or all of the nations like racists live in the South. That's not what's happening. You know,
You'll see our friend Taylor and I get excited about politics in certain places. it's not because we're necessarily, we're excited because it's like, again, Rich Hall says this, it seems like the world is always waiting for the South to get better. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's what we're feeling. We're like, oh, look, we're not.
Yeah.
So we're actually waiting for that. And it's interesting because, you know, the only other place I've seen that is Belfast. So I did I think my supervisor was brilliant on a lot of different levels, but she sent me as a Southern woman to Belfast because I wanted to write about this stuff, all of the stuff we're talking about. And she sent me there. And I remember someone saying the same thing that I just said to you. In Belfast, a guy said, no one hates us more than we hate ourselves.
Yeah.
And I just remember thinking, wow, like that. Like, and that, it's a different thing.
Yeah.
And
different reasons, different situation. But yeah. Yeah.
They become this blight. Mm-hmm. It's exactly what Duck is, great name, by the way, is saying about the UK, because there's this famous quote. It's one of the prime ministers goes to Belfast and is in the plane coming back to London and basically is like, if they want it, they should just take it back.
Yeah.
Talking about the Republic. And, you know, it's this idea of maybe every place needs that, like that sort of thing. But there's a difference if you're from there, because then you're just like, okay, well, what do I do now that I'm from that place? And I will say, like, there's no pride in this. Like, it's not, people oftentimes say, oh, like, we make jokes, you know, Georgia by birth, Southern by the grace of God. Those are jokes. Like, they're jokes to make us feel better. Like, they're not real life. And
like, you being Southern is a big part of who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you bring it up frequently. Often. I think, and, you know, like, you love the South. You do.
I do.
I am very, you know, going to talk about Colorado, but like, we have very different feelings about these two things.
We talked about it.
I'm like
the sibling, like, don't talk about us unless you're into it. But then also, sorry.
And you're like, great. Colorado is the greatest place.
Yeah, you're like, this is amazing.
This is, in fact,
you have no complicated relationship with Colorado.
No, and not to say that Colorado is perfect by far. I mean, we had Japanese concentration camps, so, and like, the KKK was massive. It was a bad place for a long time, but like, it doesn't have the same kind of
implications now.
And you know, it's a very different
thing. Making fun of the Colorado stuff is jealousy. Like, I can recognize that. Like, I would love to have a place that's so less complicated
that you can just be like, I'm from Colorado. Because also, like, I'm most of the time when I tell people I'm from Colorado, they get excited about it. Like, oh my God, I love Colorado. Yeah.
What's that like?
Yeah. It's lovely.
Because I say Georgia and they go, oh.
Yeah, like, I get that it's very different, and
but it's not a victim mentality. It's just sort of, you just sort of accept it. Like, that is the world that you live in.
But it was something, because when I was approaching this whole thing, I was just like, there's no way I'm getting up there in front of a bunch of Southerners and being like, here's my opinion about the South.
There were a lot of them there.
I did call myself a Yankee in it. I said,
she did, and she said, as Leah calls me, and I was like, I mean, it got people laughing, and I think that was, you have to kind of, because again, much like Kristen lived in Scotland, and especially Glasgow, a lot of things, the way that you lead for people to like you and is no pretension.
Yes.
So when you led with that, it was about as perfect as what you could lead with.
Yeah. I mean, I was trained well. Glasgow trained me well, because we had to do the same thing with Glasgow. We love Glasgow, but it's got its problems, right? And so, 100%. Like you go in there, you can't be like, here are my opinions about Glasgow, because they will.
You did it exactly right. I'm coming in here, and you know, she calls me this name and everyone giggled.
Yeah.
And it was immediately, the air is like, push, it's fine. Yeah. You know, like
Yep. So, it was a great panel. I here's what I will say too. I am so interested in seeing where it continues and like developing, watching you develop or like helping with whatever I can, but like developing the continuation. Cause I know that a lot of people do talk about this and there is studies and stuff, but like, I think having a kind of concentrated effort towards talking about religion in the American South is necessary and it's a good thing. So
I'm excited. It's something, like I said, I always tie it back to that's what I wanted to study. And then my supervisor said, why don't you study here instead? And gosh, don't, why? Listen to your supervisors.
People. Always listen to your supervisor. Like, if there is one tiny piece of advice, like single, if I could only give people going into their PhD programs, if I could say one single thing, it would be just do what your supervisor tells you to do.
Because she goes, why don't you, she actually told me to just go visit. She was like, go visit for a weekend. And I said, okay, I'll go visit for a weekend to Ireland. But then you realize, I was
what a test.
Oh,
yeah.
This is, I know this place.
Yeah.
And it's different, but I know so I think, always listen to your supervisors. So next year it's going to be, guys, it's going to be in Richmond, Virginia, which is lovely. I've never been, but I hear it's amazingly pretty and
also wonderful. Apparently there are many activities, including a fine arts museum. We heard about the fine arts museum many times, so I'm going to go there.
It's going to be, she's going to make her go. But it's going to be at Virginia Commonwealth University, which is great. I will force all these boys that we always talk about, that make us, quote unquote, make us go to these conferences. They're all my time now.
Yeah.
So I've got your number, guys, if you're listening. But yeah, no, it was a good time, and I'm excited about it.
It was really successful. Yeah.
Yeah. But also here's what I'll say about conferences too, and this is my final word. It does make you think about, by the way, we're drinking gin and tonics, guys, because we're trying to think of something that was like a little not even Southern, but just like hot weather.
Hot weather, because it is balls hot here today.
It has now become balls hot here.
Balls hot.
So we are entering into the Florida's, not the danger zone, the Florida zone.
The Florida zone, yeah.
I forgot what my conclusion was going to be because I've been drinking gin and tonic.
Conferences. You were talking about conferences.
Conferences are good because they make you like reflect a lot. Like Christy and I go to them often.
We do.
And we'll go to different things. We went to different things this time. And like, I think what they do is they really get you to reflect on your practices and like how you do things. That's what I see. Sometimes people go to find out subjects. I've kind of already got the subjects I'm interested locked down. If you're a younger scholar, that may not be the case. But they certainly get me interested in how people are doing research. And I find that very interesting.
100%. Yeah, I agree with you. I think that when I was, in various iterations of my academic education, undergrad and grad school and postgrad, et cetera, one of the things that was stressed upon me a lot was that if you want to be good at any of these things, you need to read and that you should just be reading as much as possible, which is important. We should be reading a lot. I think, though, that something I learned later was you should also be watching people do. Reading is good. It makes you a better writer. It opens your brain. It works your brain. There's a lot of important stuff that comes from reading. But watching people practice their own, you know, study, research, craft, whatever, is also a good way of learning how to be better at your own. Like seeing, you know, okay, like Ben, like that was a great paper. I appreciate it. And I feel like I learned a lot. We met in the other session. We also met other people who did a great job at two very different kinds of papers that, again, I was like, yeah, this is going to make me better at my own.
Because I do want to comment that we did do another. So that was the Religion in the American South session. But also there was a Religion Queerness in the American South where we met Brett and we met Austin.
Yeah.
Who gave papers as well. And I, or actually, sorry, Austin was in our other panel, but Brett was in the, that one and talked about this idea of, surveillance and,
yeah,
and queerness, which I thought was such an interesting thing. Cause,
so
Brett is a pastor at a church in, I think it was Raleigh, which it is a,
yep,
it is quite a liberal, as North Carolina goes, quite a liberal city as it goes. But how the sort of Brett was doing a reflective on kind of situations he'd been in prior,
mm-hmm,
where there had been a lot of sort of personal surveillance. We're not, because when I read surveillance in a way, I thought like, oh, like.
No, but he used it. Yeah. It was more like, yeah, people are always watching you when you're in.
Yeah.
And this is something that we know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as professors, the students are always watching us. I feel like we're being surveyed constantly. I've just never thought of it with that specific word, but putting that word on it was like, it opened a whole new world to me. I was like, oh my God, yes, this is so true. And like, yeah, he was talking about as a pastor, the way he's been under surveillance. Again, not necessarily always a malicious thing, but like it is just a thing and it's happens. And it, yeah, but both of those papers were also great.
And Austin was talking about Billy Graham and this idea of inerrancy of the Bible, which causes a lot of issues that we see in this region for,
mm-hmm,
and perhaps other regions for issues,
yeah,
that we have, which was great. So yeah.
Which again, it was another paper where like I was like, man, great job at doing a kind of qualitative study of this discussion. Yeah, like just really top-notch papers, I thought. Like
100%. And he was talking about archives and like yeah, I've done archival research as well, and it's tricky.
Yeah.
He was doing Billy Graham stuff. I've done stuff in the Southern Baptist Archives in Nashville. And they, a lot of these archives have a very specific narrative that they want you to put, speaking of narratives that they want you to put forward. And it can be really difficult because you have this like amazing, like kind of like cornucopia of information, but you can't use a lot of it because they're not going to let you tell a story that they don't want to be,
yeah,
told.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, working within the confines of what you're allowed to discuss or bring to light or whatever can be very tricky. And I thought he did a great job of
doing
that as well. Yeah. Maybe. I'm very impressed. You know, big AAR is flashy and cool and I love it, but like it's been a few years since I've been to a regional one. I used to go to the Rocky Mountain regional one every year, and man, the regional ones are just so good. They're so good. They're so good at meeting people, at like finding friendships, but also just like really, cause like this kind of interaction doesn't always happen at Big AAR. People are rushing off to the next thing. And we got to like sit and chat with people and like really dive in. And it was just very, it was like a good boost, a like academic boost. So
yeah.
Thanks for being the president.
You're welcome. Me and the president-elect have decided, me and Nathaniel,
mm-hmm,
we've decided that our we're gonna have entry music.
Yeah.
Which feels important. Nathaniel's at Florida Memorial in Miami Gardens. I'm at Mercer. And I said Tupac is his favorite, mm-hmm, as Chris heard. So he's gonna have Tupac. And I'm going to have Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
Which is going to be a real dynamic.
It's going to be amazing. I think it's a perfect 1-2 punch.
It's like, oh, did you think this was happening? Because this is happening. And I don't even think it matters what order we go in. I think people will be disarmed either way. So no, it'll be great. Yeah, all right. Well, and I thank Christy for coming on this journey as ever with, if you're going to go in academics, have some partners along the way. Don't be alone.
Yep. Do it with friends.
Yeah. Do it with friends. All right, guys, we will see you in a while because Christy's got to go be a bridesmaid.
Yeah, we'll be here next week.
Oh, never mind.
We'll be here next week, and then we will have book club the week after. So if you want to book club with us, it's going to be on the 16th, which is a Monday, and we are doing the John Green book.
Which Alaska?
One? Alaska, the Alaska one. Looking for Alaska or something.
Seeking Alaska?
Searching for, I can't remember the word Alaska.
For Alaska and your eyeballs.
And and then I have to go be a bridesmaid. So we've got 2 weeks of things.
I'm not bitter about it,
guys. We'll be back again. Yeah.
All right. See you later.
Bye.
Bye.
Can't find. Oh, here we go. I'll cut that out.
I just went.